Really got to get around to updating that intro. Anyway, I'm John Arola. Welcome everyone to Fridays here at the Damage Report, where we're going to ease you into the weekend with a little bit of last bit news. Some good stories, some bad stories, mostly bad stories. It's in our charter, but welcome. In addition to the news, which we're going to give you, we're also going to be throwing some political garbage away, our garbage people of the week, which normally is something that I do with Brett Ehrlich every Friday. Well, Brett's off, you know, being a hero, going on adventures and things like that. But we have something even better, and you can tell him that. We've got Jason Carter. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Hey guys, I'm glad to be here. Hold on, let me take out my retainer. Okay. So sorry, audience. I forgot I had it in. Inappropriate. But here we are. John, hello. Happy Friday, John. Good to see you. I'm glad to be back here on the Damage Report with you guys. And everyone, hey, Dragons. I'm caffeinated today. This is actually an almond caffeinated drink that is allegedly, reportedly has claims of not having any calories, but no one's buying that because it tastes too good. But I'm ready, set, go, locked and loaded, John Arola.
Nice. Well, look, I can see that on our social media, people are locked and loaded as well on both Twitch and YouTube. Your face is everywhere. We launched the Jason emoji on YouTube this morning, available to all of our members. It's a great picture. There's a different one on Twitch. You gotta collect them all, everybody.
Anyway, they're like Funko Pops. You gotta, you know, available where toys are sold.
Exactly. You can get a Jason in the checkout line at your local 7-Eleven. Anyway, but great to have you here. You're going to be throwing away a garbage person. That's great.
I am.
I've got a garbage person that none of you are going to be able to guess, but I think it's perfect for Jason being on the show today. So we'll have that for you a little bit later on. Everyone, thank you for being here. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already. That would be delightful. And if you want to send us messages, super chats, tweets, anything like that, as we go through this hour of news, we'll of course respond to that. Before we jump into the news, I want to let you know about a few things. I am going to be leading the first hour of the Power Panel in the Young Turks today. Cenk Uygur is off, but we've got Ben Dixon and Aaron Ryan, so it should be an awesome hour. I've already got a few ideas for bits of news that hit a little bit too close to TDR that we're going to be doing on TYT. Also, next Monday, this is a call out there for all you Dragons. This Monday's episode of Old School, it's gonna have me on it. I'm actually gonna be joining them live for Old School. This is next Monday, June 7th, 10 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Pacific time. And you can watch on tyt.com/live, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. And so it should be a lot of fun. It's been a while. I think it's been the entire pandemic since I've been on Old School. So that should be a lot of fun. I believe I'm gonna be on with Ben and I think Mark Thompson, if I remember correctly. So that's coming, should be a lot of fun. That said, ready to do this thing, Jason?
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
Okay. Oh, Biden's negotiating. He's negotiating with those Republicans because that's what's necessary to get his bills passed or not, but he's gonna do it either way. He has already offered a series of concessions to try to secure a now $1 trillion infrastructure deal with Senate Republicans in an Oval Office meeting this week, narrowing both the spending and the tax proposals. Guess which one was narrowed more? But here's the amazing thing. So they're massively cutting the infrastructure bill. He's willingly doing that. And the New York Times portrays the situation post that as a deal still appearing to be a long shot, with potential tax increases the biggest hurdle to winning the kind of Republican support that Mr. Biden has said that he is seeking. So we're gonna have more on this, but just understand that like the New York Times is reading the outcome of this exactly the same as we told you on the income side. You can do whatever you want, buddy. You can give them whatever they say they want. They're not gonna vote for the bill regardless. They want you to make it as small and pathetic as possible, and then they're gonna gleefully filibuster it. So you're not gonna get your infrastructure, you're not gonna get your whatever, your EV funding, all that stuff. Now we've got more. Jason, what do you think?
You know, I had high hopes for Biden. I really did, and I still do. But I mean, sometimes you have to take five steps back to take one step forward. I don't have much to say about this because it's one of those things where where one for everyday people, when you talk about taxes and bills and infrastructure and filibuster, they're like, what exactly is all of that? Like, what are we looking at here? And then you have people like the New York Times that try to explain it for us, and then we're still puzzled by it. But I'm gonna put all my faith in Biden that he knows what he's doing, but all will be revealed in the coming months. And yeah, I mean that's, I mean, what else can you say about it? I mean, it is what it is.
We can say a lot of things at him very loudly and hope that eventually he'll get through, I think. There's a lot that I think plays into this that is based on a combination of either misconceptions or deception. So there are perhaps, being charitable, some misconceptions, like for instance, this from New York Times coverage of this ongoing battle, saying the talks are being sustained by a desire among lawmakers in both parties to reach agreement over what has been a longstanding but elusive goal in Congress, repairing and enhancing the country's network of roads, bridges, water pipes, and other physical infrastructure. That, again, being charitable, is a misconception that there is a genuine interest of politicians on both sides. Republicans are just every night, they stay up late thinking, oh, the bridges, I wanna help the little people with their roads. No, they don't.
That's right.
No, they don't. No.
Right, they don't give a damn about potholes.
Sure, yeah. Okay, I guess a few of them are like, well, you know, it'd be nice to be able to run on us having done something. Oh, but it's Biden, so he would get credit for it. Oh, and we would probably have to raise tax to pay for it. Nope, screw the bridges, I guess. No, they're barely Democrats that care enough about this to get it done. You think there's like 10 Republicans that are just seriously like, I just, you know, I don't like this commie socialist Biden, but I really wanna see public transport make it to the next level.
Right.
No, New York Times, how stupid are you? That is not true. That's just not true. And the idea that it'll work, that's the misconception that Biden, again, charitable misconception rather than deception. Republicans said on Thursday that Mr. Biden was seeking more spending than they were likely to support. They privately panned his continued attempt to fund the bill with increased tax revenue from corporations and high earners, even if blah, 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 blah. Yeah, they don't support any spending if it would require higher taxes on the only people in this country that they care about.
Right, and
that's
and
the whole thing.
And that are also have the money to, let's be honest, to pay higher taxes, right? It's they, the people who they have buckets and buckets of money. That's, John, you know what? That's what is so bizarre about rich people, right? I understand the rich stay rich by monitoring how much money they save. But when you have what's like, let's say Oprah was one of these people that, you know, she's a billionaire and she has, what's $10 million to Oprah? That's nothing, right? But yet the amount of vitriol and just whining and what's the word I'm looking for? Just pouting of the rich people when it comes to raising taxes to do something well is just unconscionable. It's like, yo, it's all good. That $1 million you were gonna spend on maybe lipo or augmentation for your wife or something could be very well spent to fill the potholes here in Miami, right? I never understand that. So, but that's what it boils down to. Them not wanting to come out of pocket for something that could possibly be good for other people, right? Am I interpreting this right?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's one interpretation. Another would be that they're just masochists and they see all the memes about guillotines and they think, let's see if we can turn these metaphors into something real. I don't know. Right. Maybe they just want to drive people into a murderous rage. I don't know. But that said, while we can't necessarily explain the psychology of it, it was totally predictable that they were going to turn against this. And that Biden is going to waste time negotiating with them and cutting it down. So he's now cut more than $1 trillion from the $2.3 trillion infrastructure proposal, which at the time we said was too small. And even people like Joe Manchin were pretending that they supported $4 trillion. So they cut that. In the meantime, Republicans have added less than $100 billion in new spending to their first offer. So let's just do some math here. So the party that won the presidency, the Senate, and held on to the House, that won all of it, are giving 10 times more than the side in the minority. And even that is a massive joke because he could take their bill. Maybe one would vote for it, but like maybe Murkowski would vote for it. That's it. Susan Collins would say that she didn't, and then she'd like be really like concerned about it or something like that. And by the way, that cutting a trillion, he already cut it to 1.7 trillion last month. So 2.3 trillion really quickly became 1.7, which has now become less than 1.3. It's barely more than what the Republicans are pretending to support right now. So the whole thing is just very predictable, very depressing. I don't even know what's left in it after they cut out that $1 trillion. The EV stuff that I'm excited about, I don't even know if that's still in there.
John, do you ever marvel at the amount of, when you just said repeatedly trillion, 1 trillion, 1.7 trillion. Do you ever marvel at the amount of money that is available? That's just available, right? And if you do, you stop and think about, and this is like probably going on a tangent, but I always think about this when I hear about these bills. I was listening to NPR the other day and they were talking about a lot of these bills, especially here in Florida. And the guy was like, yeah, $9.9 trillion is being allocated for this, this and that. I'm like, $9.9 trillion? Where do we, where, how, where is this coming from? Like who's printing this money? Does that not like floor you when you hear these numbers?
Yeah, it is a lot of money. Bear in mind, these are bills that deal with, you know, like the infrastructure bill deals with 8 to 10 years worth of spending. And we are a country of obviously, you know, like a third of a trillion people, a third of a billion people. So yes, they're very large figures, and very large figures being slashed away from it with every passing day, unfortunately.
True.
And then why? Why is he doing this? Very briefly, the New York Times attempts to explain it. If talks break down and moderate Democrats blame Republicans, a reconciliation bill would most likely be easier for Mr. Biden to push through. Yeah, you know, if we pretend that we don't know anything about anything and anything about anyone, yeah, that seems reasonable. That's political strategy right there. Except, no, what is Manchin to become more reasonable? You're right, they did really try with those Republicans. Biden really gave it a go. In the pre-show, we just talked about, he described the Capitol riots investigation, like the commission. Mm-hmm. He said, we did everything we could have done to make it bipartisan. And they filibustered it. So is that a problem? No, we're just gonna try again. So like, no, New York Times, don't try to be fake reasonable. It doesn't matter, none of this strategy works. What we're gonna end up with is like a $1 trillion bill that maybe they'll pass the reconciliation, and effectively, the Republicans will have had more influence over the process than the party that controls every branch of government.
Right, 100%. The exhausting cycle of politics, never ending.
Somewhere out there, the investigation into Matt Gaetz is ongoing. I don't know how it's going. Again, everything that we've heard about him over the past few months are technically allegations, with a lot of really suspicious corroborating evidence. But anyway, there's another wrinkle that's just been added to this, and that is the possibility that he could get in legal trouble for potentially interfering in that ongoing investigation. Federal prosecutors are apparently investigating whether he obstructed justice during a phone call with a witness in a potential sex crimes investigation. The witness in question was one of a handful of women who entered Gaetz's orbit via Joel Greenberg, who you've heard a lot about, who pleaded guilty last month to a host of crimes, including sex trafficking a 17-year-old in 2017 that he alleges the congressman also paid for sex with. The obstruction inquiry stems from a phone call the witness had with Gaetz's ex-girlfriend. At some point during the conversation, the ex-girlfriend patched Gaetz into the call. While it's unknown exactly what was said, the discussion on that call is central to whether prosecutors can charge Gaetz with obstructing justice, which makes it illegal to suggest that a witness in a criminal case lie or give misleading testimony. The witness later spoke with prosecutors. So yeah, we have more on that. So he got on the call with one of the people the investigator is gonna be talking to. I'm assuming this is a big misunderstanding and he just wanted to lend them moral support in this difficult legal time.
No.
Moral support.
Right. Of course, this is all alleged, and he's still innocent until proven guilty, and this is still ongoing. But as you said earlier, John, and I'm here in Florida. Matt Gaetz, of course, is a state representative. So I have, you know, there's eyes and ears everywhere. Just kidding. There's a lot of things that are very that corroborate what's going on with Matt Gaetz, and you know, that's one thing. you know, he claims he's being extorted. Like, this is an extortion. Like, there's all the people are against him. This is all a ruse against him and his family. Fine, whatever. But allegations like this are hard to come back from, even if this shakes out differently. And I can understand from a political standpoint why Matt Gaetz, of course, is wanting to get in front of this. But it's just very suspicious and very fishy. And, you know, from everything we've read, everything that's come down, you can't help but be like, yo, Matt. Come on, what's going on, brother? You know what's going on? And then for him to get on this phone call, again, we don't know what was said, of course. Everything's all alleged. But as you said, I don't think he's hopping on this phone call to talk about Downton Abbey or the return of Cobra Kai on Netflix. No, I don't think that's what's going on. And we know, and what we've seen in the past, especially from people who have been staunch Trump supporters, not to say they're all alike, but they're all alike. Once they're in power, they want to stay in power, right? This is what gives them. This is the sun to Superman to them, right? So this whole ordeal can completely, obviously, usurp anything Matt Gaetz has done in his career, and that's not what he wants. So I can't wait. I can't wait to see what happens. But also in the subject of sex trafficking young women, young adults, someone needs to be brought to justice here.
Yeah,
you know,
Well, especially in this time.
Right.
When absolutely. Supposedly so many Americans are like, the only thing going on is pedophiles trafficking women. Well, okay, let's take it seriously for a little bit. Sure. If you say it's so important, you want to save the children,
right.
Put down your sign, pick up the congressman. Anyway, alleged congressman. So yes, all allegations, you know, if he doesn't end up literally going to jail as a result of this, I'm a little bit more pessimistic than I think you are about the damage it would do to his politics or to his political career. Maybe since he's already apparently a pretty unpopular figure inside of the Republican like establishment, it could hurt him, some opportunities lost or something like that. But for the voters, I don't care about this. Republic, well, I don't think a lot of his constituents are like, oh no, these don't match my family values. I don't think that that's actually the way they think.
No, I mean,
we'll see
for sure. There, you know, this is one of those things, John, I think that had it been, if this was, let's say it was me and I was, and God forbid, I mean, like the hype, super hypothetical, that I was in the situation. First of all, me being a black man, persecution would be, it would be a field day. It would be like, they would hop in the fastest car to drive to my stoning and my burning at the stake, right? Because,
yeah.
That's what the conservative people view marginalized groups of people and BIPOC people as less than. But because he is of privilege, more than likely, let's sweep this under the rug. You know, it was a bump in the road. It was a misunderstanding. What's the phrase you always use for when things get really hairy? It was a very dark time. From that gate, right? It's always a dark time when they do really egregious things. I think that's what probably happened. And that's sad. And that's sad because if there is any truth to any of this, which I, again, it's all allegations, we don't know, he is innocent right now. If there's any truth, we have to think about the young women or the young woman, or if there's other young women that are attached to the situation, their trauma, in addition to the message it sends out to other people adjacently viewing what's happening to this and reliving their trauma if they've been sex trafficked or if they've been assaulted. There's this domino ripple effect that goes along with this that I don't think some people take into account is a reality for people, right? They don't think about, oh wow, there is reverberating effects to this beyond just the current situation, the people who are currently involved in that current situation.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. The woman that we were talking about is apparently pursuing some sort of immunity deal from prosecutors. Doesn't sound great for him. A lot of this doesn't sound great for him. Sorry, allegedly doesn't sound allegedly great for him. Anyway, we'll see. We will see. Okay, you know what? We're gonna jump. I think that we can just quickly slide in our bit of breaking news. So if the team can just roll with this. Right before we went live, we found out that Facebook has apparently decided what they're gonna do with the problem of Donald Trump. He is, after all, now banned, as he is on virtually every other platform. There's a knitting forum I occasionally go to. He's banned on. No, but he's banned on a lot of things, and he is now just suspended on Facebook for 2 years. That was a decision that the oversight board came down with as a result of his comments inciting violence in the wake of what happened on January 6th. So Facebook taking January 6th more seriously than the Republican Party as of right now. They say that they will only reinstate him if the risk to public safety has receded, which I don't know if that's a general risk to public safety. I'm assuming his commentary about January 6th will be a lot, toned down in 2 years. Will the things he's talking about that are more current at that point risk public safety? I don't know. This seems to me, Jason, to be, let's just not deal with it for 2 years, but maybe that'll placate him a little bit that it's not a permanent ban. And our reasoning to potentially reinstate him is gonna be super vague, so we can really just test the waters, when the time finally comes. That's what it feels like to me. What do you think?
I would agree 100%. I mean, a threat to public safety, okay, well, yeah, January 6th, absolutely. That was a moment that was I mean, I don't have the words to describe what that was besides what we've already talked about ad nauseum here on the Damage Report and across all media platforms and news. But for Facebook to take that stance, sure, great. At face value, it's cool, right? It looks as if Facebook is on the right side of history saying, hey guys, we're here for you. We're gonna ban Trump, and it's gonna be for 2 years. And we're protecting everyone. We're protecting the community of Facebook. But I mean, okay, cool, great. Yeah. And here's another thing though, too, John. I don't think banning Trump from social media, for me, I can only speak for me personally. He let him tweet, let him come on Facebook, let him say what he's gonna say, because it's neither here nor there now for me, because I know better, right? I think we're very well equipped to, or at least I would like to think that most of us have the wherewithal to see right from wrong and to decipher things for ourselves as adults and as people.
Oh, you optimist.
No, I mean seriously, like let's keep it 100 though, John. I'm sure you guys watching at home would agree that like when we go on social media, we take things with a grain of salt and we say, okay, well this is BS, this is stupid. We scroll, we move on. But I would love for Facebook to do this. Facebook to say, hey, we're gonna open our platform to allow Trump to have a forum. Mm-hmm. And let him say his piece or have some kind of dialogue with Trump, with some notable, maybe not even like not a Barbara Walters, but maybe like a Lester Holt or a Cenk Uygur or a John Iadarola, and get to the bottom of what in the F were you thinking the last 4 years? Really just extract everything we've ever wanted to know, because I think Trump is waiting for that opportunity to do that. Because right now he's writing that memoir, he's planning his return if he does decide to run in 2024, and we haven't seen the last of him. This is just the calm before the storm. We're in the middle of hurricane season, and that Category 5 is coming from Trump. So yeah. Facebook would be smart to allow him to be on the platform and still have a voice, because we still want to hear from him, I think. But to your point though, for them to take this stance on it, fine, cool. He's banned from every place else. It's business as usual, at least to me.
Yeah. Well, look, in terms of that storm that you say is coming, well, when it's coming, 2 years means if he runs for president again, hey, he's back on Facebook for it. Like they didn't randomly chose 2 years, they chose 2 years. So he'll be able to post in his next run, they will be able to make money off of his political ads in his next run, very convenient for them, potentially influencing them as well. In terms of whether it makes sense to bring him on, look, I get what you're saying. I don't really have a lot of faith in people. So in comparison to you, I used to, I grew up watching Star Trek. The issue is though, like he inspired this, invasion of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. He's probably going to do it again. He did it on Facebook. Are they obligated to let him inspire more violence on their platform that they could potentially get in some sort of trouble? Like, theoretically, if they had hung Mike Pence and it was all advertised on Facebook, could the family of Mike Pence have sued Facebook for allowing this crime to be organized on? I don't know, it's complicated. I'm not saying that that's the stuff that Facebook is really focusing on. I think they're just trying to manage the PR of it. But anyway, look, it could end up being a moot point, because in 2 years, like they're saying we're suspending him for 2 years. Twitter as of right now is saying he's banned permanently. But 2 years is a long time. Are we 100% sure that he won't be back on Twitter in 2 years or on Twitch or on, you know, God knows what other platforms have replaced them by then? I don't know.
Right, like, you know, Trump's new medium is gonna be TikTok, right? He's like, forget it. You know what, I'm gonna do TikTok videos. How you like them apples? But I think, John, John, really salient, great points there. And two, I think if Facebook, Instagram, okay, well, Instagram and Facebook are the same company, but Facebook, Twitter, if they were to, I think it would send more of a message to permanent ban, indefinitely, wipe their hands and say, we're moving on. But dollars and cents, right? It comes down to, at the end of the day, these are both for-profit companies that know that they can make a lot of money from those political ads in 2024 or whenever you know Trump decides to become a part of that world again. So, but to send the message that would show, one, we don't care about the money, we care about the people. A permanent ban would be that message, right? And another great point, like, who knows where, I mean, people are already migrating off of Instagram. People are already deciding that, you know, Facebook has become nothing but ad after ad after ad and whiny crybabies. They may say, hey, look, we have this new app that's called, I don't know, Wood Desk. And that's the new hotness. And you know, and since it's such a new app, we don't have any kind of protocol. You can say what you want. I mean, I'm still floored that you're allowed to view porn on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
You're like full on, just full on orgies on Twitter. Like, and kids are watching this stuff. So who's not to say that an app comes and says, Trump, you can just unleash the Kraken however you want, how long you want, saying whatever.
Metaphorically.
You want.
Yeah,
metaphorically.
Not in the way that you're allowed to on Twitter, though.
Right.
Anyway. You probably know that in America, especially when it comes to the federal government, there is this hard line blocking any dollars from being used to subsidize an abortion, encourage an abortion, literally anything having to do with an abortion, except apparently stopping them, because at least 10 different states have taken a variety of different types of federal welfare funds and routed them into anti-abortion clinics. This is states all over: Indiana, Louisiana, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, Texas, big states, small states, conservative states, and more conservative states. So there's some diversity there. So they've mostly used money from the federal Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, better known as welfare or direct cash aid. The clinics work to dissuade women from obtaining abortions. So they take money that is literally designed to help families who need food, and they put it to clinics that try to stop women from getting an abortion in the most difficult moments in their life. So they funneled money through, quote, alternatives to abortion programs, part of state budgets established by conservative legislatures and often run through state health departments. They not only send millions in federal welfare funds, but also state taxpayer dollars to such centers. So if you live in one of these states, you are subsidizing them. Missouri is one example of how welfare has withered in this country. Back in 2015, the state passed draconian welfare reforms that imposed a 45-month lifetime limit for cash assistance. So if you fall in hard times, you better hope it never comes again. They have work requirements, sanctions for people who did not comply. They then spent funds in that state, not paid to families, obviously, because they're cut off by this limit, all these alternatives to abortion programs. In just the past 4 years, they've sent $26 million to anti-abortion clinics. The average monthly benefit that you might lose access to is just $256. So Missouri is in such tight budgetary times that they have to limit you for the rest of your life from getting any benefits of this sort. However, they have enough money that they can put them into effectively these like crisis pregnancy centers and all that.
Which is, Jason, so, what do you think? I think it's disgusting, to tell you the truth. I mean, I'm gonna start by saying that I am, people may not agree with me, but I'm pro-choice. As a man, I don't think I have any, and no, hold on. Let me say this accurately. I feel that a woman's body, it's her decision to make a choice what she does with her body. Full stop for me. That's full stop for me. And the fact that, you know, it goes back to, John, to what people are, what are they so afraid of when it comes to women's reproductive health, right? Like abortion and those sort of things that these conservative people, and I would imagine it's founded in maybe a religious doctrine, a religious background, or religious beliefs that, you know, that's something that you shouldn't do as a woman. And people have the right to believe what they want to believe. But when you're taking money from welfare and you're for people who could really use this to feed their families, and it's of and these funds are going to a positive, very productive place, and funneling them into places that are the antithesis of that. Because of what you believe, I don't get that. It's almost as if they say it's what they place the value on, right? If let's say my friend, we're gonna call her Tracy, says, you know what, Jay, I'm gonna go seek an alternative to my pregnancy, and we know what that is. I'm like, well, Tracy, if that's what you feel you need to do, then go and do that. Because you doing that doesn't affect my life. This doesn't have any bearing on my life. And I think a lot of these people get involved in business that's not theirs. So by taking money away from families who need it to, oh, because we feel so strongly about abortion, it's just like, hold on, stop. Look at yourself. Like, do you understand? Are you smart? I mean, I don't even know what to say. Like, Let's stop a minute. You know, it's just and again, going back to a woman's, these men, and I hate to say, these privileged older white boomers, these privileged older men, right? It's none of your business, dude. It's none of your business. Or let your daughter or your niece, the girl who's turning up at Texas A&M, the girl who's turning up at Mizzou, the girl who's turning up at Penn State, get it, and then all of a sudden maybe she ends up pregnant and is thinking about that alternative as well. What do you say to that when it hits close to home? Then what do you do? Oh, right,
they'll always be available when they need it, mostly for mistresses, possibly daughters too.
It's a not in my own backyard situation, since it's never happened to them. You know, they can't walk a mile in someone else's shoes. And again, that's just my stance on it. I am very pro-choice, and I will always be pro-choice, because I do not have the right to tell a woman what to do with her body, and I leave it there. But I don't think taking money out of people's mouths who need the money and funneling it into something like this is also the answer. Yeah. And of course, in states like Missouri and, like, I don't know what, Texas and everywhere.
There's a lot of people who could really use the help.
Right.
In one of a couple different forms, either not instituting things like that lifetime cap, or I don't know, maybe increasing the amount you get per month, because like $230 doesn't really seem that great. And it's not just in Missouri, Texas. Their cap, I think, is $231. Oh, to be eligible, you can't earn more than $231 per month. Okay, but if you have $45 million in federal welfare funds over the past 15 years to put into this stuff, maybe that money could instead go to easing the restrictions a bit. Because somebody who's making $230 a month, like, or who's making $240 a month, I should say, might still need help. I don't know. Seems crazy. It is America, though. Maybe they could use some help. But it's potentially not going to be there. And by the way, so this is now making news, that this, you know, sort of summing up of how much money we're talking about over so many different states. Like, if there was some big reporting that Drudge put together of like the federal money that's going towards encouraging abortions, it would be the only thing you heard the Republican Party talk about for the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. States across, Republican dominated states across the country would pass legislation instantly. It would be Fox News all day long, every day. How could they do this? They're putting money, wasting taxpayer dollars for this? No.
Right.
You're not gonna hear much from the Democratic Party. There's not gonna be bills. There's not gonna be any like federal legislation to stop them from using this money for something that is definitely not actual welfare programs. They won't, because although there's technically, you know, anti-abortion and more in favor of abortion politicians, one side, the side that the law and morality has favored this entire time, are still really shy about it. They really don't want to talk about it. They certainly don't want to make a big stink about it, because like, oh God, what if we turn off a couple conservatives that would never vote for us anyway? And so, yeah, no, you're not gonna hear much about this. You're not gonna see some big legal or, you know, federal regulatory change as a result of this, and people will suffer. Whether it's people who are desperately in need of an abortion, or it's families that, I don't know, would just like to eat during a difficult time. And by the way, they did this during the pandemic, when so many people were losing their jobs.
And John, I mean, again, awesome points, John. And at the end of the day, the people that are making these decisions are so far removed from the everyday experiences of people that are in those situations, right? It always blows my mind how they make people that have power, that are in these power positions, make these decisions. And you stop and think, well, do they ever sit and think, okay, let's, you know, the person I gave a name to earlier, Tracy, how does this impact Tracy's life? You know, like if I was Tracy, how would I feel? This is a person, this is a human being, this is someone whose life I would imagine matters in some way, shape or form. How would me having such a staunch, strong, very aggressive belief and stance on something like abortion or something, I don't know, like LGBTQ rights, how does that impact them? And why don't I care enough to at least have some compassion for these people? That always sits with me. And it really breaks my heart because these people sit on their Capitol Hills, sit on Capitol Hill in whatever state. They have their Sunday barbecues, they do all these things with their families, and they live this great life. And they're so far removed from the everyday life of people who this is affecting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And could care less and sleep at night and just, and you know, and go home and say, you know, we did a good job today, buddy boy. You know, we did the Lord's work today.
Yeah.
You know, it's
we let those families go hungry.
Right.
Jesus had a little bit to say about hunger, if I recall, but I'm an atheist, so what do I know? Anyway, you know, I think some of that frustration that you're expressing, others are feeling too. So we're gonna turn now to that. I want to play for you a bit of the speech of a valedictorian, Paxton Smith, who decided not to deliver her previously scripted remarks, but instead to talk about what Texas was doing when it came to women's reproductive health. The full speech is available online, but here is a bit that we want you to see.
I have dreams and hopes and ambitions. Every girl graduating today does. And we have spent our entire lives working towards our future. And without our input and without our consent, our control over that future has been stripped away from us. I am terrified that if my contraceptives fail, I am terrified that if I am raped, then my hopes and aspirations and dreams and efforts for my future will no longer matter. I hope that you can feel how gut-wrenching that is. I hope you can feel how dehumanizing it is to have the autonomy over your own body taken away from you.
And there's a lot more where that came from. You know, she's gotten a very positive response. What she says is very honest and very real, very timely, considering the insane anti-abortion law that Texas just passed. Where effectively you better deal with the pregnancy before you're likely to even know that it's there, or else you're gonna be banned from doing so. So yeah, loved her comments. Jason, what'd you think?
I would agree, I loved her comments as well. And this is just a very clear, and it's very indicative of how present Gen Z and younger millennials are and what's happening around them, what's going on in the world. I mean, this is a valedictorian of her class, right? This is someone who has spent the last 4 years busting her ass to be perfect academically. And that requires a lot of being present in what's going on and having the wherewithal to know right from wrong. And as a woman, right? As a woman, she's saying, I have worked hard to be in this space. Mind you, I'm also a human being that may want to get my freak on from time to time. And contraceptives are 99.9% effective, or allegedly, but that 1% could be, I could be a victim of that 1%. So in the event that 1% is victimizing me, I should be able to have the freedom to make the choice to do what's right for my body. And the bravery also in a state like Texas for her to go up and say that is well beyond her years, because people don't, and as we've seen, John, with the insurrection and with Black Lives Matter and with the death of dozens of trans women, people, violence is not a problem for people when they disagree with what you're saying, or they have opposite opinions than you, right? So for her to go up in front of her whole class and say that, at a time in her life that's gonna be historic for her, right? When you're giving your at a commencement speech, that's when you look back on that and think, wow, that was one of the most pivotal and awesome moments of my life. Even though you'll have more of those, but in her time, in her life right now, that's a huge deal. So for her to take that time to speak on what's happening in the world, I applaud her. I think she deserves even more response. The same way we have exalted and lauded the youngest poet laureate, we should bring this girl on.
Yeah.
And have her celebrated for having that bravery, because not a lot of people would do that.
Yeah, she could get in trouble with her family. She could get in trouble with her school. She could get in trouble with one of, I assume, the many colleges that accepted her. This is Texas. Like, she could get in a lot of trouble. Definitely is getting death threats, rape threats, and all of that. There's no chance in America, in Texas, with our internet, that she's not getting that. And she knew all of that before she did it and still did it. She used her opportunity to speak eloquently and honestly about that experience. And we have potentially a country full of people like her, of women like her, and our politicians, mostly Republicans, but not entirely, just want her to shut up. Just shut up. Just go and don't do it. Like, imagine how self-destructive a society to just continually dice up our population into groups that we want to just press down and shut up. Don't say anything, don't create anything, don't make anything. And that's what we do.
It's very Handmaid's Tale. It's very Gilead. It's very Gilead, very Handmaid's Tale. And again, the question I always pose, John, and you guys watching at home, is what is the threat of her having that stance? What is it? How does that threaten the fabric of your life, especially if you're a man? Especially, is it dollars and cents? As we see with these bills, it comes down to dollars and cents, right? But for Adam, who works the Piggly Wiggly off of 6th Street in Squashville, Texas, her wanting to have autonomy, as she said in her speech, I want to have autonomy over my own body. Why is that a threat to you, Adam? You don't even know her. Like, you're not sleeping with her. Like, what? Why does that peeve you and move you? What is it within you that you haven't reconciled that her speaking her truth is such a threat on the fabric of your existence? These people need to ask themselves that.
I agree. Okay, we have got a couple more stories to get through before we get to the time to take out the trash. That is coming. We're gonna close out our show with that. But first, let's jump into, oh God, our country is filled with terrible people. Jason's asking these questions about like why people think the way they do. Well, get ready to ask the same question here as we jump into this. We are just a couple of days into Pride, and we entered Pride with Ron DeSantis with his terrible bills targeting the LGBTQ community, targeting trans youth in particular. Well, they got to keep it up as the month rolls on, and they've got some ideas. A bunch of Republicans, now led by Marjorie Greene, are trying to make sure that the like rainbow flag is never flown again over federal buildings. This is, of course, a long shot bill, since thankfully they're not in charge, that would prohibit any standard besides the American flag from flying at US embassies. They gained a handful of new Republican co-sponsors on Tuesday, the first day of Pride. Probably coincidence. It's probably just a coincidence that they chose that day to sign on to this effort. And they're not sending their best. They've got Representative Louis Gohmert, Rick Crawford, Brian Mast, all signed on as co-sponsors of the Only Old Glory Act, introduced by Representative Jeff Duncan. The bill currently has 20 co-sponsors, most among the most strident opponents of LGBTQ rights and racial equality. I just want to point out how hilarious it is that they have a bill, the Only Old Glory, that's the only flag you need. Also, I love the Confederate flag. It's great, keep flying it. Only Old Glory. Oh God, I just want to pose in front of this Confederate flag. They somehow managed to hold those thoughts. But as a defense of this, an explanation of this, here is what Representative Greene had to say. During my statement for Congress, I promised that I would always put America first, saying that the bill will prevent hate America flags from flying over American embassies. Well, look, I agree. If somebody knits together a flag that just says hate America, I don't think it should be up there at all either. I didn't even know that that was going on. But Jason, of course, she doesn't like that the Pride flag could be flown. She didn't like the one time something affiliated with BLM was flown, and they're trying to stop it now.
Okay, well, first, I'm gonna start by saying happy pride to our LGBTQ plus viewers right now. Happy pride. Secondly, last time I checked, on September 27th, 1979, I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, which makes me, per the Constitution, a citizen of the United States, right? And I am LGBTQ plus, right? So I would imagine that I am. I think I have the right. I am not. I don't hate America being gay. Like what? Why? Because I. Who says I hate America? I mean, I love America. And also, all the states that were mentioned in that were all these southern states: Florida, Texas, South Carolina. It's like I'm no shock there. And again, how coincidental, how very convenient that on the first day of Pride, we signed this bill, which it's not going anywhere. John, I can't say this enough, brother. Marjorie Greene, first of all, why hasn't someone muzzled her? One. Two, racial, they say we're not racist. We're not xenophobic. We're not all of these things, but you totally are. You totally are, because if you were not those things, then how I move through the world, or how another BIPOC person moves through the world, or anyone who's LGBTQ plus moves through the world, wouldn't matter to you. You wouldn't, that would be, as I've said one time on Pop Trigger, my sexuality is the socks of my outfit, right? I still put on a shirt, jeans, a watch, cologne, brush my hair. That makes up all of Jason Carter, not just my sexuality. So if your bad behavior wasn't that you didn't have something against LGBTQ plus people, or you weren't remotely racist, then who I am wouldn't matter. You would embrace all of the beautiful things about people for just who they are. So I can't fathom, and it's hard for me to accept why having an LGBTQ plus flag, or the gay flag, the rainbow flag, is such an issue for them. It doesn't do anything. And also, we're in a time now where we're accepting. And they probably, what's even more funny is that they probably work with someone who is trans. They probably work with someone who is LGBTQ plus. They probably have that they don't even know, because it's not that big of a deal, right?
Yeah, but, or because they don't feel free to actually
be who they are
because of people like Congresswoman Green and others. And Louis Gohmert and all of that. But yeah, so I totally agree. Why should it bother you so much? I mean, there are millions and millions and millions of Americans that are represented by every one of those letters and others in that acronym. They can be represented too, except they can't, at least if they were in charge. And what is basically happening, so let's just be clear about what's happening here. So Louis Gohmert and Mast and Crawford and Green, they see something political and they think that's not correct. That political thing isn't correct. I don't like that. It's gone. It's banned. They're canceling cloth because they don't like it. Just bear that in mind. Again, anytime you hear anyone who's not a hardcore right winger conceding an inch on political correctness or cancel culture or anything, it's BS. It doesn't mean anything. When they don't like something, they try to ban it. Knee jerk, super fast. It's Pride, ban the flag. We gotta ban it. I don't like it. It's not correct. We're gonna get rid of it. It is that all that narrative just is so frustrating that people accept their PR spin on that. And now, thankfully, they're not in charge, so it's not going to happen. But this is what they want to do.
But also goes back to John. You mentioned knee jerk, right? Also, the knee jerk reaction for a lot of these conservative right wing people is religion. They love to hide behind religion. Their reasoning for things is God, the Bible. Old glory. So who made these rules? They can't give you. None of them have been able to give you a very clear, and as I used before, a salient reason for it that makes sense, right? You know, people are more apt to believe something if you can make it make sense. And every time they try to justify or reconcile why they do what they do, it's never ever like you're like, what? No, come on. And these are Ivy League, very, at least I would think, very smart, very educated people who make millions of dollars a year, who have some sort of mental faculty going on that allows them to get in their car and drive daily. They could articulate why they feel the way they feel, but it's never ever something that has weight. It's never ever. Because our forefathers, George Washington wore a wig. George Washington wore a nice lace front wig, bro. Our forefathers were fierce, right? So it's like, you don't have a leg to stand on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, really fast, I want to continue with this theme of the pathetic, whiny strike back against the fact that Pride is here. And again, the attempts to cancel things that people don't consider politically correct. So we're gonna turn to this now. The movie Cruella is now in theaters. I actually was lucky enough to go and see it in a theater because in LA we're vaccinated and so it's safe. Now, if you've seen it, you probably know that in addition to Emma Stone, who was great, the movie overall I really liked, there's a character named Artie, who's one of her friends. Not a lot is said explicitly about Artie, but you are led to believe that Artie is a member of the LGBTQ plus community in some form. It's not a focus of the movie, it's just a like sort of B plot of the movie. But that was enough to cause the utter meltdown of some Republicans. This Omar Navarro we're gonna talk about is a multi-time congressional candidate as a Republican, running and failing over and over to defeat Maxine Waters. Tweeted, the new Disney Cruella with Emma Stone just ruined my childhood with an openly flamboyant gay in the movie. Disney persist shoving the LGBT agenda down our throat. That's not an accurate read of the movie, which I have to, what did he see it? Do we believe that Omar Navarro actually saw it in the first couple days and is in theaters? I don't know, but I will say that there might be something else going on with your childhood and your nostalgia for it. If this is all it took to ruin your whole childhood, years and years gone. Like, didn't you ever make like a snow fort, a pillow fort? At least, did you have pillows to make a fort out of? You don't have any positive memories. Anyway, John, Jason, I don't know if you've seen Cruella, but what are your thoughts about this?
No, I have not seen Cruella, but I do have a lot of those 101 Dalmatian McDonald's toys from the first movie, 1996. I worked at McDonald's and collected them all. Second, Omar, when you have such a visceral response to something like that, that's not even remotely what you're calling it to be. I think Omar, maybe you want to start looking within and questioning your own what your tastes for what you like in certain things. Maybe you might be a little LGBTQ plus. I don't know.
Lot of hate to go around.
Right. You know, this is just one of those. This could be either one of those attention grabbing tweets that people that are, we don't know what's going on in Omar's world. But if it wasn't, I have not seen the movie. But John, I trust your educated review on the movie. and I can imagine that Disney, that it probably wasn't as intense as Omar is making it out to be. And so what?
Sure.
So freaking what? Disney, especially on a lot of their scripted dramas like The Bold Type, and there's just so many things that this is real life, folks. There are there are flamboyantly gay things in the world that are beautiful. So what, Omar? So what? It ruined your childhood. What?
Your childhood wasn't that great.
Yeah, and I watched 101 Dalmatians lots of times. I don't remember that being one of the pivotal Disney movies from my childhood. I think one of the pivotal Disney movies from my childhood would have to be Aladdin, The Little Mermaid, Hercules, Mulan, great movie.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, and this is in the theme of, you know, it's fine to be exposed to new things, new information, to be learning throughout your life. Like, for instance, someone on Twitch points out, Jason, that 1996 movie was not the first 101 Dalmatians. Jason's young, he doesn't know. There was an animated one a long time ago.
I saw, okay? I was forced to watch it working at McDonald's.
Yeah, that's true. Totally kidding there. Anyway, and by the way, again on the movie, which was good. It wasn't amazing, but it was perfectly fine. I like Emma Stone. The character's not flamboyantly gay. He's flamboyant. He makes clothes. Is he gay? I don't know. The movie's not about his sexuality. It's not anything about. I would presume you're supposed to assume that he's gay, but I have no idea. So again, I don't even know if he saw the movie. That said, there were some responses to it, including from John Stamos, who said, if that ruined your childhood, I hope you didn't watch Full House. Three single men living under one roof, raising kids in San Francisco. Of course, he's joking, they're presented as straight, but like you have to be so shielded. This is a party that is full of guys who literally never stop talking about being alphas. And they just fall apart at the slightest like exposure to anything outside of their own personal experience.
John,
by the way.
Oh, go ahead.
What's up? No.
I was gonna say, I was gonna say flamboyant, the term flamboyant. So when I think of flamboyant men, do we remember the WWF of the 90s? Those were flamboyant men in tight underwear, long hair, very peacocking everywhere. And they consider those men alpha males. They consider those men the epitome of masculinity. And I always found them to be hyper colorful, hyper flamboyant, and very eccentric, right? So when we think, when we have that moniker or that term of flamboyant on people or gay men, we have to stop and think about, well, what does flamboyant encapsulate? What does it encompass? Because not all gay men are flamboyant, right? Like people love to have that as just that. When I think of a gay man, he's always got to be like, yes, work, well, and that's beautiful too. But that's not sure. All that being gay is. So we should really reclaim the word. We should, right now on the damage report, there is going to be a reclamation of the word flamboyant. You're welcome. It's done.
Yeah. By the way, yeah. Anybody could be. Because gay people are all sorts of people. Scar, by the way, from Lion King, gay. I can't prove it, but there's as much evidence as Artie from Cruella, because the movie's not about their sex lives or their sexuality. So right. In my world, it's canonical. Scar was gay. Anyway, I have no idea. You're 100% right. WWE's performers are incredibly flamboyant, and that was one of the best things about them. I loved how flamboyant they were. It was great. I grew my hair long because I thought Rob Van Dam was so cool growing up. Anyway,
exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, we're just gonna gloss a little bit over it, but he spent time in lockup for stalking his girlfriend, did a bunch of scary stuff. So maybe the movie's not the big problem. It's your weird view of women and all that. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Well, every week the garbage piles up and has to be dragged out. So I choose a garbage person of the week, and my guest does as well. This week, Jason Carter, who is your garbage person?
Well, you know, this morning I woke up, and of course I was talking to producers about like who has really pissed me off this week, and it was multiple people in multiple states. My garbage persons of the week are the 8 state representatives that are voting on anti-trans legislation that are affecting the youth, LGBTQ plus youth in their respective states. And I say that because the conversation is these kids are trans. One. We will never know what it's like to experience that and move through the world as these young adults, these children, right? That are already living a life that has so many obstacles stacked against them. To have people now saying you are a third class citizen, you're not even a human being, you don't matter, your existence doesn't matter. What you've gone through, the abuse you've experienced, the trauma you experienced, we don't give a damn about that. You are no one, because we want to make sure that our kids can have a fair playground when they're playing sports in school. Fine, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but who's protecting those trans kids, right? Who's protecting them? And now this has become such a topic of conversation across the country. And these kids, as I said earlier in the show, John, are reliving that trauma. We don't know what's going on at home with them. We don't know if they're being abused. Yeah. There's so much, and also they have a higher percentage rate of suicide. So their life may be cut short because of them just trying to what? Live their life, right? So my garbage people are all from the governor of Florida to all these people in these southern states that have what 8 states now as of this week.
Jeez.
Per CNN that are saying, hey, we're gonna sign these bills into law because we want to make sure that little Becky or little Ashley or Janie can play sports fairly. Fine. And there's some people who disagree with that, who have parents who say, well, I do want my daughter or my son to be able to play with someone who was at birth the sex they were at birth. But I just feel I don't see anyone coming to, or at least in the current dialogue that I'm seeing on social media and throughout the media and also on TV, saying, well, hey, well, what about the trans kids? What are we doing for them? Fine, we have this law. How can we make their lives easier? Right? And again, kids, 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 young adults that are so impressionable and just starting out their life. Who's there for them? Their life matters, and we see them. So those are my garbage people this week, John.
I think there's a lot of garbage people in that, and they all deserve to be there. There's a couple things about it that make it like, it's for every reason that you just said, it's obviously horrible. There's a couple things that make it like even slightly worse. Like knowing that every single one of them is basically doing this because they think it's gonna help out their movement a little bit politically. Like that they don't believe any of this. They don't care about the sports. They're not interested in that. They just think we need something right now. Oh God, we just lost and Biden's doing all this stuff. So I guess we hate trans kids now. I guess that's our thing everywhere simultaneously. All the states, we're just doing it everywhere. It's so like to take any group, but especially a group of young people who are almost universally experiencing something unimaginable, so difficult already for a million different reasons, and think that's how we're gonna whip our base back up is just so callous. And then also, like Republicans trying to like stoke a culture war about some member of the LGBTQ plus community is not new in any way. And their focus on kids isn't super new either, but in the past, like, you know, 6 years ago or so, I think around then, every Republican was just constantly talking about trans people in bathrooms. That was like the thing that they talked about.
Sure.
And everything that they said was terrible and definitely inspired violence and discrimination against trans people was terrible. I feel like most of those people at the very least were adults. Now it's like exclusively attacking kids.
Right.
Which is like even a little bit worse. It was already abominable. And now it's like, no, we're gonna attack them when they're in there even more vulnerable. And we're gonna make their school life as difficult as possible. We're gonna make their family life as difficult as possible. It was already so terrible and they're finding additional ways to just make it so reprehensible.
Yeah, it's terrible. And like again, it goes back to the question I've been asking this whole time, John, is like, what is it about their existence that's such a threat, right? And you'll never know how someone's life is because that's not my life, right? But I do think that you can enter tons of compassion. You can enter tons of at least wanting to understand and say, hey, at the core of everything, you guys, this is a human being whose life matters. And they're loved by someone. Hopefully they're loved by someone. Hopefully someone values and cherishes them, right? Why can't that be also at the core of this conversation? You know, what the arguments that the parents are making make sense. They're worried that their son or daughter, at least some parents I've had the conversation with. I had a conversation with a woman here in Florida about it. And she was just like, you know, I don't want my daughter, I want it to be fair for my daughter who plays sports to be able to do that and have that experience. But I also told her, well, do you know that a lot of, especially male to female transition, there's hormones, they're not as strong as, they don't carry the same strength as a man. There's a lot of things that goes into play into being trans. And we talked about that in our LGBTQ plus pride special with someone who was of the trans experience, that these people aren't taking the time to learn and educate themselves on. It's just knee jerk, as you said earlier, John, knee 100%. Jerk. Ooh. Trans, it sounds heinous. Let's get them. Ooh, and their kids, we don't care. Fine, whatever. They're not gonna be around. That's just one way to wipe out the LGBTQ plus community. Let's start while they're young. Let's get them while they're young. That's what they're doing.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Great garbage person. And now we transition to mine. My garbage person of the week is Circuit Court Judge Kenneth K. Lee. But why? We're gonna go on a little journey together over the next few minutes to figure out why. Kenneth K. Lee was writing a decision on a case that had to do with Wesson Oil and the phrase 100% natural, which was being labeled on it. The exact details of who's in the wrong or whatever are not really important, but really fast, we're gonna read just a little bit. So it said, simply put, Richardson, the new owner of Wesson Oil, can resume using the 100% natural label at any time it wishes, thereby depriving the class of any value theoretically afforded by the injunction, which I'm sure legally is a very important point, means nothing to me. But Kenneth K. Lee goes on to say, ConAgra thus essentially agreed not to do something over which it lacks the power to do. That is like George Lucas promising no more mediocre and schlocky Star Wars sequels shortly after selling the franchise to Disney. Such a promise would be illusory. So that is an analogy that Kenneth K. Lee is making. The issue is that that's not where it ends for Kenneth K. Lee. So if we zoom out to the full page of that decision, you can see that down at the bottom, there's actually a little footnote. And if we zoom into the footnote to prove Kenneth K. Lee's point, Lee says, as evident by Disney's production of The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. And how dare you, sir? You want to make a point about oil and you have to drag The Last Jedi through the legal muck to make that point? Okay, if you don't like The Rise of Skywalker, I get it, buddy. A lot of people didn't. But what's up with The Last Jedi? You can't make your point without leaving that alone. It was experimental. It was bold. It was courageous. It wasn't necessarily the movie that Star Wars fans wanted, but it was the movie that they needed at that point. And for the judicial system, I feel assailed on all sides. And now I can't even turn to the courts without my most fundamental pop culture opinions being attacked. Jason, it's not fair.
John, I've never seen you have such a deep, moving response due to Star Wars, man. Now, we know what your triggers are, John. We know what your triggers are. But yeah, how dare he enter Disney and
Leave
Star
Ray
Wars
alone
into the conversation? Ray didn't even get a doll when they were making like Star Wars dolls. I remember that was a thing they covered on Pop Trigger.
Yes.
It was like when they were doing like female empowerment and they were using the Disney princesses and people.
Yes.
Ray didn't get a doll. People were pissed. How dare they shun Ray? Why is there so much shade around Ray? It's criminal.
Yeah. And by the way, look, when you're dealing with a judge, you're supposed to bring like a sound argument. And you know, this is complicated. We only have another minute or so, but I will point out to the distinguished Kenneth K. Lee that on Metacritic right now, The Last Jedi is sitting at an 84%. So I don't know, maybe I'm not the only one that gets it. And by the way, one of my go-to movie reviewers, the great Alonzo Duralde, said, Star Wars, The Last Jedi movie review, the thrills are strong with this one. Purists may balk. But Rian Johnson's episode 8 is a ripping intergalactic yarn. So take that, Judge.
Zing, zing.
A ripping intergalactic yarn. Yes,
hey, if Alonzo Duralde, zing, zing, buddy. If Alonzo Duralde says it, hey, man, it is law. It is law.
It is law. He's a great man. I miss doing movie reviews with him. Now that said, those are our garbage people. What about you? 33,000 of you, up until the point that our community tab crashed, went and voted this week. And we've got 5 coming in at number 5 this week with 1% of the vote. It's Twitter conservatives for falling for Kenny Clip's pranks again, but thank you for doing so. Coming in at number 4 with 13% of the vote is Governor Greg Abbott for signing new awful legislation pretty much every day. We have a tie for 2 and 3, both with 14% of the vote. You have Curses Cinema for claiming the filibuster protects democracy and lying about it, and DeSantis for signing an anti-trans bill on the first day of Pride. So some overlap there with Jason. But number 1 this week with 59% of the vote and the community garbage person of the week goes to Michael Flynn for saying a military coup should happen in the US and then cowardly denying that he had said that when it's on video and we know what you said, buddy. So that is your garbage person of the week, Michael Flynn. Thank you to everybody who voted. And thank you to you, Jason, for joining us on this Friday. Always great to have you here.
Always great to be here, John. I always love our conversations and everyone watching at home. And guys, thanks for having me. I think we gotta just be, we gotta do, when it comes to this anti-trans thing in these 8 states, we really gotta be careful and just and take care and protect our trans kids because they need that. And I stand by that. And we gotta really show up for the LGBTQ plus community for Pride this year, but also show up for each other. You know, it's not even about marginalized groups of people. Let's just don't be crappy people. You know, like Ellen says, be kind to one another.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. She doesn't always do it.
Right. Yes. Bad okay, example.
Have a good one, Jason. I was good talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.